Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. As we continue our election coverage, we focus now on Illinois and Chicago in particular, where tensions were high leading into Tuesday's primary race. A state's attorney race in Cook County had gained national attention after activists launched a campaign to oust the incumbent, Anita Alvarez. Alvarez came under fire for being soft on police accused of shooting unarmed people, including in the high-profile case of Laquan McDonald. An online Twitter campaign, hashtag #BuyAnita, drew much attention to voter dissatisfaction with her record. Kim Fox, an African-American former assistant state's attorney, won her seat. Just days before, a massive mobilization in Chicago to confront Donald Trump had led to clashes on the University of Illinois campus. GOP frontrunner Trump canceled his rally, but claimed a wide victory in the state of Illinois on Tuesday. Democrat Hillary Clinton also won Illinois, beating her rival Bernie Sanders. Joining me now from Chicago is Sarah Makarig. She's a journalist and a writer based there, and she's an investigative reporter, an editor's fellow, a New America Media Fellow. She writes for The Guardian, Vice, and Truth Out, and was closely following the race on Tuesday. Welcome to Uprising, Sarah.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, it was a pretty amazing turnout, and it was a pretty stunning loss for Anita Alvarez. She only won something like 20% of the vote?
Yeah, 25%. To Kim Fox was 62%.
So that's a landslide win for Kim Fox. First, Anita Alvarez had her tenure for two terms. She was seeking a third term. Would you say from the journalism that you did and what you observed that her position on police killings, in particular the Laquan McDonald case, might have been the defining factor as to why she lost?
You know, I think that the answer, you know, to that question is yes, but also the flip side of the coin, which is, you know, the movement that has unfolded across the country, you know, since the killing of Mike Brown, the Black Lives Matter movement, I think is the flip side of the coin of what, of all the sort of damage that she's done in her tenure in office, as people have seen it. So it's not just how bad she's been. I think it's also that people have been organizing and that people really have just had enough. I think that that's what's behind her loss. You know, a lot of the headlines today say, you know, Kim Fox oust Anita Alvarez. But really, to me, it was the movement that did it. And I think that, you know, when you see that Bernie Sanders also didn't necessarily beat, you know, the standing strong political Democratic machine here in Chicago, I think that really shows the strength of the movement. You know, everything that people have been outraged by and everything that people have wanted otherwise, you know, here in Chicago, in the last year and a half or so, was funneled into this campaign very creatively, and I think in a very Chicago fashion, which you also saw at the Trump rally, and that, you know, there's a particular style of activists here in Chicago. There's a movement that's incredibly strong, and people are really in it to win it. And I think while, you know, I think normally one would think of campaigns that are all about what somebody's against, are often cynical, don't necessarily offer an alternative, I think this campaign really showed there's a whole nother way to do electoral politics, which is that people absolutely said what they are not going to allow to continue in their communities. And they did know what they're for. They weren't going to throw their support behind a candidate. You know, they're for restorative justice. And I think that that's what's behind the win to me.
So I want to quote, there was a Patch.com report on the voter turnout, just following up on what you said. Voter turnout in Chicago was over 50%, according to the Chicago Election Board. 26,000 new voters registered to vote. And this surge in voter participation most likely could be attributed, according to this article, to the effort to oust Alvarez. This had implications for Clinton in the city, too. This sounds consistent with what you were saying, that a movement that was very upset with what Alvarez was doing actually put their money where their mouth is and registered to vote and voted on primary election day. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that a lot of the direct actions were very bold, very brave, and drew a lot of attention. You know, what happened in the run-up to the big Trump rally that got national attention were a ton of events along the campaign trail that dogged Anita Alvarez everywhere she went. I mean, everywhere she went, there were faces of fatal police shooting victims. There were chants of 16 shots and a cover-up alluding to Laquan McDonald. So there was a lot of direct action, but there was a ton of get out the vote drive. The hashtag Buy Anita itself is really what that was. You know, in a way, it was a get out the vote drive. It was a public education drive. And there was, you know, people, you know, involved in elections really know the importance of canvassing. And you think of that as walking around and knocking on doors. There may have been some of that. But what was very clear is a new style of canvassing by movement people, you know. And I would say, you know, a lot of young people, and a lot of this was led by, you know, young Black queer femme women, you know, sort of gathering together, sometimes bringing along young people, bringing along students, and hitting public transportation. You know, that's canvassing. That's very new school canvassing, taking over a subway train, talking to people, handing out literature. I think the movement to oust Alvarez took shape on a number of fronts. And in some ways, there were traditional strategies like canvassing, but that were implemented in very non-traditional ways.
And let's actually, even for those of our listeners who have not been paying attention to what's happening in Chicago, I mean, for you, Anita Alvarez's record is pretty clear, but how bad has it been? I mean, even outside of Laquan McDonald, which I think was a flashpoint, but even outside of that, was she consistently shielding cops in Chicago?
Absolutely. You know, and I'm so glad that you asked that, because, you know, all of the ire that has been directed at Anita Alvarez has so much to do with all of the 8 years that preceded, you know, the Laquan McDonald scandal. Her role in that is incredibly egregious. The role in the Laquan McDonald scandal is about, you know, giving police a pass on violence. It's about the obstruction of justice. But really, that's her whole, one could point to her whole 8 years and see that pattern in a number of cases. I also think another thing that the movement pointed out is that, you know, fatal police shootings are really the worst of the worst. But in Alvarez's record, you could also see how she's incredibly punitive and does very egregious things in the sort of the daily grind of the criminal justice system. So, you know, I mean, some examples of that are that, you know, she's refused to reopen cases of people who have proof of, you know, very strong cases of and potential new proof of the fact that they were wrongfully convicted, has refused to open those cases. She's thrown the book at civilians after they've survived encounters with police. So people who have been shot by police and survived have then, you know, there's a trend of those people then being charged with attempted murder of the police officer. The justification is that the person pulled a weapon on police and the police had to fire.
The Daily Beast had an article that was headlined, Chicago's top prosecutor cleared killer cops 68 times. Wow.
Yeah. And there's, you know, one of the things that I found in my work as well, and some of the cases that I've covered, are the stories of the people and the families within that 68 number. Because there are cases, egregious shootings, that the city of Chicago has settled. You know, to the tune of millions of dollars, while Alvarez has decided not to press charges. And some of them are just, you know, they're frankly difficult to believe. I mean, there's, you know, if you imagine that 68 number, and then they're among them that are cases, you know, there are so many cases where there aren't, it's hard to build a case because the police account is the only account and there isn't any other evidence. But there have been a number of cases within that 68 where people have tried to counter, you know, the police story, where people have tried to fight for justice for their loved ones in whatever means they can. And Alvarez has actually been the sticking point on it. You know, there's one story, very heartbreaking, I'd love to tell you really briefly because it tells you a lot about Anita Alvarez. There was a young man named Clint Farmer, and he was shot by a police officer named Gildardo Sierra, who is still on the force. In the span of 6 months, Sierra shot three people, two of them fatally. Clint Farmer was one of them. After 2 years, after a 2-year investigation, Anita Alvarez said, not every mistake demands the action of the criminal justice system, even when the results are tragic. So she says this about this officer, Sierra, who was caught on video shooting and killing Flint Farmer, who at the time had already been shot. He had already been shot by Sierra, and he was down on the ground. The dash cam video shows Sierra getting out of his car, slowly walking in a semicircle around Flint Farmer, who was already wounded, and he shoots him another 3 times. Muzzle flashes, which means close range. And Sierra's excuse was that he was in fear of his life. And Alvarez, after a 2-year investigation, after the city of Chicago settled that case in civil court for $4.1 million, made an argument about not pressing charges. And so it's true, you know, that pattern is there and it's very real. It's just her record is almost hard to believe until you really start to look at all those individual stories. And I did just want to share one because I think it's important to say that, you know, she's out of office, but look at the damage that's already been done.
And do you think that Kim Fox, her successor, gets that now, that because of the movement's strength and outspokenness against Alvarez, that this new state's attorney is on notice, that she's been voted in, but she could just as easily be voted out as well if she doesn't start holding cops accountable?
Yeah, I think that she's absolutely on notice, and whether or not she gets it or the degree to which she gets it, it does seem, you know, the tenor in the air here in Chicago is that she will be made to get it if she does not get it. And, you know, she's voiced, you know, a very different style of, you know, leadership she would like to bring to the, you know, to the office of the state's attorney. Alvarez has a policy, speaking of the daily grind of the justice system, that's not just these really egregious fatal shootings. Alvarez has a policy of pursuing the maximum penalty against juveniles. And Kim Fox has, you know, vocally criticized that and come out against it, you know? And so I think that's the type of thing where she's already said on record she would do differently. I think people will hold her feet to the fire about that. But everything else we're talking about, there are people who are being convicted now, you know, people who, the examples along the lines of what I mentioned, you know, people who survived police encounters who are being convicted now, you know, so what will it mean in terms of will current prosecutions, you know, will those be dropped? Will cases be reopened? Will a conviction integrity unit actually be staffed and funded? A new district attorney in Brooklyn recently staffed and funded a conviction integrity unit that has led to 19 exonerations there just since he's been in office since January. Will Kim Fox do something like that?
Right. And I also want to mention that in Cleveland, which has been marked by the police killing of the 12-year-old boy Tamir Rice, voters ousted Cuyahoga County Prosecutor Tim McGinty. He was the one overseeing the case of the police shooting of Tamir Rice. Many are drawing comparisons between that race and the race that Alvarez lost yesterday. And it seems like sort of nationwide in these cities where police killings have really outraged people so much that the people are really organizing. And I'm wondering also, let's talk briefly, Sarah, about the fact that there was a lot of the Buy Anita crowd at the UIC campus rally last Friday, wasn't there? Weren't there a lot of folks from Black Lives Matter who helped to shut down the rally? Well, I should say the rally that Trump decided to shut down after their clashes.
Yeah. And I think, that was a huge turnout. And, you know, UIC students, and that's my alma mater, by the way, but that's a very minority sort of community of students. And, you know, from my understanding, thousands of them turned out. It was a very broad Chicago turnout. But absolutely, that Black Lives Matter activists were in some ways at the center of it. There was a particular street blockade that was entirely, you know, young Black queer women from the movement. And what they were, yeah. And I think what's incredible is that, like I said, this is a very radical political education get out the vote campaign. And part of what they were shouting is that you know, if you're here, you know, in support of Bernie, if you're saying dump Trump, then you need to learn about Anita Alvarez too. And you need to say bye Anita too. And I think, I mean, wow, if you look at that, what a service really to the left, to progressives, to make those connections for people in that way. And again, I think that the goals were, you know, there were multiple goals. I also think that in the spirit of like, you know, no, we will not allow the Office of the State's Attorney to do this to our communities, to treat people this way, to disappear people this way, to act like these deaths and these lives have no value. I think that's the same spirit that's like, Trump, no, yeah. Not in this city. Not in.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us. Where is the best place people can follow your work or read your writings or any social media that you'd like to give out?
I'm on Twitter at Sarah Mack, which is S-E-R-A-M-A-K.
S-E-R-A-M-A-K. We'll post a link to that from our website later today at uprisingwithsonali.com. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah McArig is a journalist and a writer based in Chicago. She is an investigative reporter and editor's fellow and New America Media Fellow. She writes for The Guardian, Vice, and Truth Out. This is Uprising. We'll be back in just a moment.